The gut-brain connection is deeper, weirder, and far more literal than we ever imagined. For years, we've been told that our gut feeling is just a metaphor for intuition. But recent science suggests that your gut is actually a second brain, a complex neural network of 100 million neurons that can operate entirely on its own, independent of the one in your skull. We aren't just talking about digestion. We're talking about a bi-directional superhighway where bacteria in your colon produce up to 90% of your body's serotonin and significantly influence your levels of GABA, the primary neurotransmitter for calm. Essentially, the critters in your gut, or maybe you want to call them your gut buddies, might be master puppeteers of your mood, your sleep, and even your cognitive clarity. But as the market for gut health explodes, the gap between marketing claims and clinical reality is widening. Today, I'm joined by Gabe Doe, the founder of Good Brew, which is a product that I've been on for the past couple of weeks. And this product claims to bridge the gap using a specific combination of prebiotics and a unique resilient probiotic strain known as BC30. Gabe, welcome to the Limitless Podcast.
Nice to be on, Jonathan. Thank you for the wonderful introduction, and I look forward to a great conversation. Many of the things that you covered there are very, very important and spot on.
So first, let's go back. 2,000 years. Hippocrates supposedly said all illness starts in the gut. Do you think he was correct?
I think he was very, very accurate in that. I mean, obviously, all is the extreme term, but I think he was, not only was he very, very accurate in saying that, and not only is our modern world now rediscovering this, but I think you could also add in mental health disease, which I don't know that he was really referring to that at the time. Maybe he was too, but I think that a surprising amount of our cognitive function and mental health disease is linked to the gut as well. This includes even Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and some of these more chronic and even fatal mental health diseases, but also our day-to-day mood and many of the aspects of just general anxiety and these sorts of things, if you want to refer to those also as diseases, at least as mental health problems or general health problems, which in the end are all connected. I mean, the body, the mind, and the spirit are all connected. So yes, I do believe Hippocrates also very much mentioned the importance of food and that being our medicine. Make food your medicine and medicine your food. So those people did have medicines. I mean, they did understand things. There was a mushroom in the ancient world called a specific strain of agaricon, which from what I understand, they knew was very, very potent. There was some other herbs and things that now are extinct, basically, or probably extinct, that they knew about that had some of the more antibiotic effects and other things, other effects that we now try to recreate with our modern medicine. But the best thing is to take care of your gut, take care of your body, exercise, sleep, and your gut is another primary part of that. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions with the gut at this point in time in history for a lot of people is that it's like they see it as a secondary or a tertiary aspect of our health, when it's actually primary. It's as Hippocrates was alluding to, it's a primary, just like exercise and sleep, the foods that you eat and other things that we know of that are at the beginnings of good health, your gut is one of those. And we've done so much to damage our gut over, especially since the time of antibiotics. So they can see with every generation from the time the antibiotics were introduced, like say World War II to today, the gut microbiome of Western people have, or even the developed world, have become less and less diverse. And when they look at the gut microbiomes of people who still live a more, tribal or traditional lifestyle, ancestral lifestyle, they have much more diverse microbiomes. And so, you know, when you combine the fact of, and it's not just antibiotics, but at the same time antibiotics came onto the scene, so did a lot of preservatives, processed foods, pesticides, and other toxins that are in our environment, all of which are having a massive impact on the gut. And for me personally, the first time I really heard about the gut and gut microbiome in a way that made me interested in it was when I was in graduate school many years ago, and we were working on something related to multiple sclerosis, and the conversation came up that one of the theories with MS was that it was related to the gut. The guy who had that theory, the researcher who had that theory, made that observation because many people in developing worlds, MS is a very rare disease. And some people linked it to vitamin D and other things, but this person really was relating it to the gut microbiome. And now, at that time, that was a little bit on the fringe, but now it's not.
Is it the other hypothesis on MS is considered an autoimmune disease, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yes.
Okay. Isn't the hypothesis on autoimmune diseases that they are kind of a side effect of the luxury of the long lives that us human beings lead these days, wherein historically, like our ancestors, we can fantasize about all these heroic ancestors that we had in the past, but those people were just teeming with like the most disgusting parasites in their bodies, and so we evolved these immune systems that are like hyper vigilant to deal with just the insane amount of parasites that the human species faced since time immemorial. But it's just in the past century or so, we've radically changed the ecology of this planet to where we don't face that anymore. So our immune systems are kind of like soldiers that went off to fight in some horrific war and caught terrible PTSD from this war, and then they've like come back to live in normal society, and they're just going a little bit kind of aggressive.
Well, there might be something to that, but it doesn't really add up when you look at how many young people have autoimmune disease today. It's super prevalent. When you look at a lot of other countries where they don't have the autoimmune disease, it's certainly as we get older, every aspect of our health is going to start to deteriorate, and we're going to become more subjected to any of these kinds of things, autoimmune disease or whatever. But I don't think that that's, maybe as we age, whatever the conditions are that now create the onset for autoimmune disease become just more likely. All of the functions of the body, you know, the cellular function starts to decrease over time. I mean, the cells just become, they function less efficiently, and then that allows for autoimmune disease to take hold. But to call that the cause and effect doesn't completely add up, really, because we have just so much autoimmune disease. I mean, that's what these allergies are and everything amongst very young people. And even when you look at, say, like the developing world where they don't have, where they're not getting these levels of autoimmune disease, it really points to something else as being the root cause. And then maybe living longer lives just gives it more time for it to become, you know, exposed or become prevalent, or, you know, as our bodies just become more. And I think the gut is being pointed to as a major part of that, just as Hippocrates was alluding to, that all disease starts in the gut. When we look at autoimmune disease, it's the gut is where a lot of this is being pointed to. And especially as we have less diverse microbiomes in the gut, less healthy gut microbiomes that produce the short-chain fatty acids, the nutrient absorption, the B vitamins, and all these other things, including breaking down proteins that allow for us to have a healthy epithelial lining to the gut. This plays a huge role in these, what they think in these autoimmune diseases. In other words, as we have a less healthy gut, and less healthy gut microbiome, things that are supposed to stay in the gut get outside of the gut, especially undigested proteins and other toxins. But the body sees these undigested proteins as foreign invaders, and we create, and our immune system creates antigens against those undigested proteins and other undigested things that are getting outside of the gut. And then creating massive inflammatory responses towards that. So that's something that's being pointed to largely as autoimmune diseases and arthritis and other inflammatory problems that we're having across the board, including inflammatory and autoimmune responses that are happening within the gut itself. It kind of just cascades out from the gut. So there could be other, you know, many other reasons for our immune system to get overactive and to create these autoimmune immune responses, but the gut is probably where the most of everything is centered around the gut. As what we're looking at in age and living longer is just going to expose more of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I have to admit, before I tried your product, I didn't know that much about the difference between a probiotic and a prebiotic. And then in my more recent research, I came across synbiotics and psychobiotics. Can you break down the differences between these for, people that might not, that might be a little bit green to this whole talk, as I was?
Sure, yeah. So prebiotics are the fuel source for the microbes that they feed on, and then you'd need this fuel source to produce the metabolites and to function properly and to do the good things. 95% of short-chain fatty acids are produced by the microbiome. About 5% come from the food that we eat, and our bodies don't produce any of these short-chain fatty acids. And short-chain fatty acids are absolutely essential to us for our cellular health. 70% of the energy source needed by the cells to function properly in the gut come from the short chain fatty acids that are produced by the gut microbiome. And then those short chain fatty acids also circulate through the body, providing fuel for the cells throughout the body, the preferred fuel source for the cells throughout the body. So this also gets back to autoimmune. When we're not producing these short chain fatty acids, or the gut microbiome's not producing these short chain fatty acids, the cells start to try and look for other fuel sources, and that creates a lot of metabolic problems. So the prebiotic is the fuel source, the fiber that these probiotics feed on to produce these short chain fatty acids and many other metabolites that then keep the gut healthy and also keep us generally healthy in a holistic sense as well. So there's a lot of products on the market sold by big pharma. Like the biggest selling soluble fiber on the market is not even a soluble fiber that we would have naturally gotten and historically to feed the microbiome. And they try to call these things prebiotics, and I don't really think that they are prebiotics. I don't think they've really been studied as prebiotics, and it doesn't really make sense from a long-term evolutionary standpoint that they would be prebiotics. But these things are like corn dextrins and wheat dextrins and even synthetic fibers. So that really are not something that's been part of our normal diet, at least not on a large scale. So we use in our product inulin fiber, and we use an organic inulin fiber. So they have created different inulin. Inulin is a kind of fiber. It's kind of polysaccharide.
Yeah.
Inulin from agave. So it's the same thing that gives us tequila.
Yes, exactly. So the agave plant is grown.
Was this perhaps an explored like branding angle that this was like I'm thinking like some like spring break like tequila style like a branding angle that you could have gone with on this product? Because agave, I hear it smells terrible, But I have good associations with tequila.
With tequila? Well, it is an interesting story. That's not anything to do with brandy, but it's very hard to get organic inulin. So inulin is the kind of fiber that's found in our fruits and different things. And there's different chains or molecules of inulin. If you taste a good brew, there's not much flavor to it at all. It doesn't affect the flavor of your coffee or tea. But if you taste it, it's just a little bit sweet. That's a sign that it's a short chain inulin, the kind of inulin that we get in nature. The longer chain inulins that they've created for the food industry to like stabilize foods, they don't have that sweet flavor. But it's very hard to find organic inulin. And so the agave plant is grown organically. It's grown in the deserts and in Sonora and down in that area, Tabasco area of Mexico. And it's grown organically. It's certified USDA organic. They don't need to use any preservatives in growing that plant. But there is an interesting story behind it. When I was at the Institute of Food Technology show in 2010, I was speaking to a guy, and this is when they were bringing that agave syrup onto the market, so which is not really that good for you. It's a high fructose product, but the tequila companies were obviously, or whoever is growing the agave plants, they use the heart of the agave plant to make the ferment for the tequila, but you also get the fiber from the plant, and you can make the syrup from the plant also. And anyhow, they were kind of pushing, it was just this little table, and the guy was pushing the agave syrup, but he did have some of these bags of white powder sitting behind him. And I was like, hey, what are you bringing up here from Mexico and to this food technologist show, he was like, they didn't really at the time even really have anything to do with that. It was just kind of like a side, he didn't even have it on the table or whatever, but he told me a little bit about it. And he had one piece of paper that was like an inkjet, printer piece of paper that showed a little study that a university in Mexico had done about it being, an inulin fiber and how that might, at the time, gut health wasn't, really mainstream like it is today, and how it might be a prebiotic. And I thought that was very interesting because of what I was telling you about my knowledge from the story with MS and how I had gotten kind of interested in gut health. So I already knew kind of what I was looking at where most people didn't. So I was actually, there's a little bit more of a story to this, but I was probably one of the very first people to really think about that as something that should be kind of combined with probiotics. And I came up with a product back then that combined that with the probiotics, but the product was so hard to make that I had to stop from that project and go to something else. And I didn't come back to Good Brew until quite a few years later after that. But yeah, that story, goes back to this. And it wasn't a specific marketing study. It was that I recognized it as a fantastic prebiotic that was organic. Whereas a lot of things on the market that they're selling, they're like these gums and things that they're selling as prebiotics. There's no real research behind them. Like some of these gums that they've used back from ancient times as like glues and things. And then they started using them in food as food stabilizers to basically give food certain qualities and textures and that kind of thing. And then somebody came along and said, hey, we could sell this as a prebiotics. Maybe they do have some gut health benefits, but are there something that you should normally be using all the time? What research is behind it? But we know inulin, is a preferred prebiotic. So that's the fuel source for these probiotics. And then the probiotics kind of have different classes of probiotics, and they're getting to where the industry is starting to try and deviate these out, well, largely for marketing purposes. But then eventually, the pharmaceutical industry is starting to buy up all these companies. Now they're starting to even do things like genetically modified or bacteria. And that's going to be a whole area that's going to be really, you're going to have to watch closely because it's going to have a lot of pros and cons to it. But the traditional probiotic that nature gives us, there's the colonizing microbes that we get from our mothers at birth and during breastfeeding. These are very important, essential to all the functions of the body. They're not, like I said, they're primary, they're central to our health, not secondary or tertiary. And so we get the colonizing. So you think if you hear these, the lactobacillus, the bifidobacteria, the acromantia, these come from our mothers at birth, and we can supplement some of those, but it's not really the way that we're intended to get those. So if you buy a capsule of a probiotic, it doesn't survive. It's not, those probiotics aren't intended to really survive outside of our guts. So they don't survive well on the shelf, and they don't survive through the acidic environment of the stomach. But there's also spore-forming probiotics that Mother Nature gave us, like the Bacillus coagulans, and that we use in Good Brew, and they do survive out in nature, but they're transitory probiotics. So they support the rest of the microbiome, but they come into the environment from outside, come into us from the outside environment. There's spores in the outside environment, so they survive in sunlight and heat and all these sorts of things. That's why you could put it in coffee and it survives, and it's well studied to survive in coffee. But more importantly, it survives through the acidity of the stomach. And in combination with the prebiotic, that's what we call symbiotic. In fact, in one of our first product way back when, that we weren't able to continue to make because it was too difficult to make, we actually used the term symbiotic. And I think we might have been the first people to use the word symbiotic on an actual product. It was a very esoteric term at the time that you would only find in a few papers. But symbiotic basically means that you have a positive prebiotic and probiotic working together. And so Good Brew is a symbiotic. And you got to be careful with that too, because when you really say prebiotic, the gut microbiome is going to feed on whatever is there. So in a broader sense, anything can be a prebiotic, but the idea is here is something that's having a positive influence on the microbiome. So, and the probiotic is...
This is in the reverse view synergy between the prebiotic and probiotic.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. The synergy between the prebiotic and the probiotic. Now, psychobiotic, I think... Oh, that's a little bit more of a catchphrase term. It may develop into something that's really an actual area of study. But a healthy microbiome affects your psychology. It affects your mental health. There's not, one specific probiotic that necessarily that is a psychobiotic. So psychobiotics is kind of this term that's being used to talk about the. But it is very important that the fact that they're using that term, even if it is right now more of a coined phrase, because it helps people understand how important the connection between the gut, which we call the second brain, which has a massive amount of neurons in the gut itself, and the central nervous system is. And so psychobiotic is sort of referring to these probiotics and how much they affect our cognitive health. But that's really all a healthy gut microbiome in general is important to our mental health and to our cognitive function, not necessarily one specific probiotic. However, there have been some that have been studied, Lactobacillus reuteri, or spell like Reuters, like Reuteri. That one has got a lot of study behind it for helping to reduce anxiety in autistic children, but also just to improve the mood and everyday health. But that one by itself has just been well studied.
Lactobacillus reuteri is, okay, this can be really pricey. I was listening to this podcast, a couple of podcasts with this lady who's a sexpert. I think she's about 60 years old, and she's like, remarkably attractive, and comes across as a remarkably forward and libidinous woman at about 60 years old on podcasts. And she just sings the praises all day long of Lactobacillus reuteri, because apparently that's the one that boosts oxytocin. So, yes, you would expect someone that had boosted oxytocin to, like, yeah, she's doing a good job of exhibiting boosted oxytocin. But I remember I looked up the product, and it was wildly expensive. It was one of those supplements that was like over $100 a month for just a single sub. I think it was the subscription. So you know how the subscription service thing is supposed to be cheaper than the one-off? It was like over $100 for the subscription service thing. But on the other hand, like boosted oxytocin can have some pretty awesome kind of kind of benefits. But yeah, I found that remarkable that people are willing to invest that in their oxytocin.
Yeah. So the thing with that, I mean, most of us are supposed to have some of that occurring naturally within us. And also a healthy microbiome is going to be linked to better levels of oxytocin and serotonin and reduced levels of corticotropic factor, release fat hormone, et cetera. And with that specific microbe, in fact, I have a friend who made me some, it's a very, that specific probiotic is a really good one, it's one that should be refrigerated. And it's one that also you can get, it doesn't have to be as expensive as what you were alluding to. There's many strains of it out on the market. And one of the most studied strains, I forget the company, it's one of a bigger company that makes it. It's one of the best studied strains, and it's not that horribly expensive. But here's the thing with all of those. There's a lot of people now starting to make their own yogurts at home. If you try to go buy a yogurt off the shelf, it's been pasteurized. There's very little probiotic in these. In theory, it's nice to think about these fermented dairy products having a lot of probiotics in them. But in reality, most of them have preservatives or they've been pasteurized because they have to be, especially in the United States. So you really don't get the probiotics from these things that you buy off the shelf that people kind of want the hope that they're getting probiotics from. But what a lot of people are starting to do, and it's a great trend, is that they're starting to make their yogurts at home. You can buy this little culturing tray. It's a little fermenter, it's great. They're not very big. And I actually had a friend that was making this L. reuteri yogurt, she was also using Good Brew. And one of the things you could do is you can take these probiotics off of the shelf. The ones that aren't spore form, you don't necessarily need to do it with a spore form and probiotic, but you can put them in your yogurt. And so when you culture the yogurt with those probiotics from the capsule in there, you now are, culturing that probiotic. So you get a lot more of it in the yogurt, and it's probably going to survive better too if you take it as a yogurt. So if you buy one of these capsules of L. reuteri or something else, make your yogurt with that. Now you're going to get a lot more of it because it's multiplied in the yogurt. And that's a great trend that people are starting to do. And it's not really very hard to do. That yogurt that she made was delicious. So
you're essentially farming probiotics in your yogurt.
Yeah. 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 So if people are going to
could you use that to get perpetual, could this be like the ultimate financial bang for your buck hack for your probiotics? Is you'd like go out there and get one of those really high-end non-spore probiotics and then put it in your yogurt, and then you eat like 90% of the yogurt, and then you just make more yogurt with that remaining bit of yogurt, and then the probiotics that you paid all that money to a supplement company for once upon a time are going to like perpetuate in the ongoing yogurt. Would that work?
I don't know if you can keep it going. I mean, that is kind of how traditional. So like same thing with kombucha, because it produces alcohol, if they're going to sell it in the big markets, they have to kill the microbe so that it's not fermenting anymore, or else it gets above the 2% level of alcohol. And so you really, the same thing with kombucha, but if you're making kombucha at home, from the way I understand, you do keep that, I forget what they call it, but the main bacterial, it's like a circular, what do they call it? I can't think. Anyhow, that you carry that on. Well, that's in the kombucha, but it's the same concept. In the yogurt, I'm not so sure how well you can keep it going from one to the next. I know at about 24 hours, I believe, is where you max out. And then you don't get any more really growth going with the probiotic. So I'm not sure how skilled of a person you would need to be to keep your culture going all of the time. Because keep in mind, most of these we get from our mothers at birth. It's very hard to really add back. And unless you're doing something like a fecal transplant plant or that sort of thing. But yes, and the other thing is this is very, with the probiotic market, they're trying to tell people, hey, take all these various strains, but everybody's microbiome is as unique as your thumbprint is. So how do you really know, even if these things do survive through your stomach, what is the perfect combination for you? So these are, a lot of this is marketing, and you may with time find something that works for you, and that's fantastic if you do. But if I found something that I was working and I had the time to do it, and I was using something where Good Brew supports all everything. Good Brew in the probiotic in Good Brew has very specific clinical studies behind that strain and certain things it does. But even more importantly, I think for most people is that it's, it, it has the qualities of supporting the rest of your microbiome and helping to create an environment in the lower digestive system that helps to boost up the rest of your microbes. So it's a little different way to go about supporting your gut microbiome than trying to take one specific kind of probiotic to do one specific thing. That's a bit of a challenge, but yes, I would make, I don't know if you could keep it going like you're saying, but I would definitely encourage people if you've got the time and the, and your the disposition as a person to do those kinds of things, I would do the yogurt thing.
Curious, do you have any customers with PCOS that have reported what happened with their PCOS symptoms when they started using Good Brew?
PCOS. Okay. Well, you explain that to me. I'm not.
Yeah. Polycystic ovarian syndrome. Okay. This is my research methodology. I have stalwartly resisted outsourcing all of my research to AI. It is tempting. It is tempting. But my usual research methodology is that I will just go over to PubMed and I'll put in the a search phrase. In this case, it was the BC30, and I search by title/abstract. And cross-reference by human data, because the non-human data, I'm just not that interested in. And okay, this is my methodology, and I've done this for over a decade now, is I just click, and start going through the abstracts of all the studies that I see on PubMed. And I just keep going until I see something that actually interests me, because there's like so many studies that are boring studies out there. Probably the vast majority of studies are actually pretty boring studies. So I just go on through abstract after abstract after abstract, skimming them, and until I find something that really jumps out at me. And okay, Gabe, here's a funny little experience I've had in my life. I don't know why this is. There's one country that does more like weird, interesting scientific research than I think any other country. There's one country that jumps out at me more than any other when I do this research methodology. Guess which one it is?
I have no idea.
Okay. Iran. Yeah, in Iran. Yeah, they pick interesting things to study there. So they had a triple blinded, randomized, placebo controlled study on BC30 that was done there. Yeah, and it was a recent one. I think that was a 2004. It was and it was on women with PCOS. And a while back, I had done all this research on fertility optimization stuff before we became parents. So I just learned about how hellish PCOS can be and how PCOS can rob people of the dream of becoming parents. And so that was something that jumped out at me. So I think I'm gonna tag this podcast with PCOS, because women trying to fix their PCOS should really know that this specific strain of probiotic. And hint, hint, dear listener, you probably know a woman who struggles with PCOS. So maybe you should talk to her about this specific strain of probiotic. And so something you were getting at earlier, this is kind of a higher level biohacking question that I don't have my mind made up on it yet. is there's these self-quantification and testing tools like personal genomics. I got my personal genomics done earlier this year, the full 30,000 genes. And then there's also, there's like the viome style kits where you you poop on a little tray and then you send it back into them. And then they give you that analysis of the state of your gut. They give you like that really accurate snapshot of what you might be lacking. And then, of course, I'm sure they do a very, very clever job of trying to upsell you to the probiotics that could address that. But I was wondering if that, okay, that step of self-quantification, it seems to me that that makes the most sense when a person is dealing with a intransigent stubborn issue. It seems to me that that self-quantification testing step makes the most sense if people are dealing with, let's say they're dealing with IBS or chronic constipation, or they're dealing with a health issue where they've already tried like 10 of the low hanging fruit type solutions, and it seems to me that if first of all, if people are just looking to optimize, if people are looking to make themselves more anti-fragile, if people are having an issue, a little niggling issue with digestion, and they want to address that, and they haven't really gone, they haven't like seen any doctors yet, it seems to me that the first thing to do would be to just take a good probiotic product and do some of the other things, like removing the removing foods from their diet that would have glyphosate in them. But I'm wondering if you think it makes more sense to do the self-quantification first, do that testing first before you spend money on supplements.
No, I mean, well, I'll tell you with our product specifically and doing something like using a good inulin fiber, exercise, changing your diet. These are all the things that you need to work on probably first, because I don't know if you're going to learn a lot if you, A, get that study done right off the bat, and what changes are you still really going to make? You're still going to have to make these exact same changes because you probably are not going to be able to very well supplement with whatever it is that you think you might need. So it's still going to be a big guessing game. Now, as people get older, I think there is some really interesting research around bifidobacteria. But the thing is a healthier gut microbiome is going to help all of these things survive better, because, as I said, we get most of them from our mothers at birth. Now, if you get to the point of doing a fecal transplant or something like that, okay, that's a little bit different story. But let me just give you an example. We have a functional, we have over a 50% reorder rate with our product. That's very, very high. And we have testimonials, especially a lot of testimonials, let's say with people with acid reflux or chronic constipation, helping them. We have people whose doctors have tried for years to help them with, say, chronic constipation. We have people who've been nurses, people who are very athletic, people who own fitness centers, and they haven't been able to find solutions. But, you know, they start using something that Mother Nature would have really provided us. So that's basically a soluble fiber that the gut microbiome needs for a prebiotic, and a probiotic that in nature would have come into us from outside and really helped to support the rest of the gut microbiome to help build that up. But we had a functional medicine doctor. A functional medicine doctor is one of the most respected functional medicine doctors here in Northern Colorado. He's a little bit older. Him and his wife, we saw him at an integrated medicine conference. You know, this is his business. This is, and he was having gut health issues, him and his wife. And in like 3 weeks of using our product, he called me and said, "Hey, I don't want to make any money. I just want a discount code that I can get offered all my clients." So basically, you're doing something really simple, like providing the foundational things that Mother Nature would provide to helping rebuild your gut microbiome. Probably is where you want to start, because I don't know if you really know what to do with the data anyways. And it helps to build up all of these other aspects of your gut, the gut microbes that you have there. So the way that kind of works in a real general sense is our stomach is the most acidic part of our digestive system. And that acidity is produced by the body itself. Then when we, a healthy small intestine should be a little bit more closer to a neutral pH. And then when we get into the large intestine, a healthy pH, a healthy gut, a healthy lower intestine should be a little more on the lower pH side. But the difference in the lower intestine versus the stomach is that that pH in the lower intestine is actually produced by the microbiome itself. So when we get into dysbiosis and we have more of the bad bugs, they it produces more of a higher pH or more alkaline environment. And that makes it very hard for the good microbes to come back. And so it's a battle. And once the good microbes get into control, it goes back to that lower pH of about a 5.5, which is not as acidic as the stomach, but it's still more acidic. But again, this is all done by the microbes. In fact, when you really look at the lower intestine, the role of the lower intestine is really to provide a home for your microbiome. That's really what it is. And when they look at the appendix, for example, that's what they think the role of that is that under when we're sick and historically when we were sick or now with antibiotics and these sorts of things, it's a safe haven for your microbiome. That's what the appendix, they think, probably serves as a role as a safe haven for your microbiome. That's how important it is to us. And so something like Good Brew, the Bacillus coagulans, in addition, the strain that we have, specific strain that we have, so there's a lot, the species Bacillus coagulans has been studied broadly for many, many benefits. And then the specific strain that we have, which is a natural strain, has some really good study behind it in general. But Bacillus coagulans, so that pH in the lower intestine is controlled largely by lactobacillus. Lactobacillus produces lactic acid. That lactic acid lowers the pH in the lower intestine, and it does a lot to help the other good microbes to survive. So the bifidobacteria, Akkermansia, all these others want to survive in that environment, and lactobacillus is like a keystone bacteria to that. It also helps control candida and many of these other things. But Bacillus coagulans, the same probiotic that we have in Good Brew, it also produces lactic acid. And so when it gets to the lower intestine, it with combination with that inulin fiber, it starts to produce that metabolite that then helps to support the others. So it's like you're like sending reinforcements to the lower intestine to help build this other microbiome up. So I think that's where you want to start. I think you want to start with the foundational elements of your gut microbiome and then maybe you want to get into the testing and that sort of thing. Unless there's something really specific that you really, that somebody has said, you might be lacking this and this is specifically causing this.
You mentioned candida. Do you have some interesting anecdotal evidence with candida in your customer base?
Well, we have lots of testimonials, a lot of feedback. We do have, now this might be something, when we think about candida, we all have candida. It can cause lots of different immune responses throughout the body. You can actually have it proliferate all through the body and cause a very severe disease. But we often think about it with women because the way it presents itself in women is very painful, but we all have, almost every human being has candida. I have not had I've had lots of women tell us that our product has helped them a lot. And some with their skin, their hair and different things I have, but it's also a subject that people may not come out and really tell you exactly how it's helped them. So, I haven't really had that specific conversation with candida in terms of like say feminine health, but the research is there for Bacillus coagulans and the research is there for lactobacillus. And we know that Bacillus coagulans, especially in combination with the inulin fiber, supports lactobacillus, which and therefore we know the research and the science, there's lots of research and science behind lactobacillus's role in controlling candida. So I've not had the phone call yet. Yeah, but no.
Sure. Okay. Some other interesting things that I dug up on PubMed about BC30. So, okay, it improves protein absorption and utilization. So that could be helpful to bodybuilders. Okay. It's probably this would be a good thing for whole family to take. That's what we've been doing here the last couple of weeks, because I did find a study of Mexican scholar-aged children. That was the title. Mexican scholar-aged children. And I was like, hey, you know, my son, I would like to raise him to be a scholar. So, okay. So, but the study was a study with children and BC30, and it found that it decreases upper respiratory and gastrointestinal tract symptoms. So, okay. So that one kind of jumped out at me because I can imagine, I know in Mexico that they have pretty wide ranging like gastrointestinal issues for the obvious reasons of anybody who has tried Mexican food, but also because they've adopted so much of the American fast food diet. They really have gastrointestinal issues there. And then I also thought upper respiratory was kind of interesting because children these days are kind of the majority of children these days are kind of these terrible victims of the catastrophic levels of pollution that we pump into the atmosphere in our cities. Like, so the dear listener may not believe in climate change in Florida going away because of the invention of the internal combustion engine. But us human beings do this awful, awful thing of pumping incredible amounts of pollution into city air. And so unless you're going to move out to the, unless you're going to move far away from the city, like children this is why so many children have asthma these days, is because city air is just so bad. And so I found this study helpful, that it was recommended that it helped children with that. Let's see. Another study that jumped out at me was psoriasis. Okay. It was a study on BC30 probiotics and prebiotics as novel therapeutic approaches to psoriasis. And that one was actually done at the University of Cluj-Napoca. And Cluj-Napoca is this magical little town in the mountains of Romania, where I spent a couple of weeks salsa dancing once upon a time in a past life. It was lovely. Okay, next though. It decreases bone loss in postmenopausal osteoporosis via modulating the gut immune bone axis. And that is the first I've ever heard of the gut immune bone axis. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of a lot of these things, these studies and that sort of thing. But the gut plays a big role in mineral absorption, vitamin B production. But these proteins that you were talking about as well, our whole body, our whole immune system, the whole body runs on proteins and peptides. When we take in nutrients, the microbiome plays an essential role in not only keeping the gut healthy, so the enzymes and the things that are in the gut function properly and allow us to properly digest these proteins, but the microbiome itself plays a huge role in breaking these proteins down and then reconverting them into other metabolites. And so we cannot absorb whole proteins, whether it's collagen or anything else, that we have to break them down into peptides and amino acids. And those peptides and amino acids are now what fuels the body, both in building muscle, whether you're aging or whether you're an athlete or whether you're whatever, everybody needs proteins. But and this strain of probiotic has been shown to increase protein utilization by up to 20%, which is a massive amount. But these peptides and amino acids are also what's fueling the immune system and our immune function. So the strain has also been shown to boost immune function. But in absorbing calcium, the probiotics and prebiotics play a big role in also calcium absorption. And as you know, calcium is probably the most essential mineral in the body because it has to do with the central nervous system in addition to bone health. And so we know that both the prebiotic is well studied to help in different ways release calcium from the food sources that we're eating. And the probiotics as well play a very important role in metabolizing and breaking down these nutrient sources so that the calcium becomes bioavailable. But they've also started to see that in countries where they have less sunlight, because we know vitamin D is essential in utilizing calcium, why are these people in northern latitudes still able to utilize calcium? And they're pointing to the microbiome for doing that. So the microbiome might also pick up a role where when we're low on vitamin D, we're still able to utilize calcium, and that's related to the microbiome. So all of these things are very much connected, including the lining up. The proteins are very important, and those short chain fatty acids in providing the fuel source for the cells that are in the digestive system. And keep in mind, the respiratory system is a branch of the digestive system. And when we're an embryo, we're developing into an embryo, we have three tubes. One of them becomes the central nervous system. One of them becomes the cardiovascular system, but one of them becomes the digestive system. But what's so interesting about the digestive system is that most of the other internal organs in our body are actually branching out from the digestive system. And I think it's really interesting to think in terms of, like, say, the respiratory system. Basically, we're digesting air, obviously, for oxygen to be the primary nutrient source that we need. But there's also actually other nutrient sources, or also toxins that we get from the air that we breathe. They know that when they study children in coastal areas, they're higher in a good way in iodine because they're breathing in sea air, and we need iodine for proper thyroid function and endocrine system and that kind of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of things connecting there. But yes, oral health is a big one. Oral health is being connected to Alzheimer's, and also Parkinson's. So with Parkinson's, they're making a connection between the gut microbiome, vitamin B levels, which we rely on the microbiome to both to get vitamin B from the foods we're eating, but the microbiome also produces vitamin B. And they're linking this to Parkinson's disease as well, maybe because of the way that the cells are then able to process iron. If we don't have a healthy microbiome, we're not able to get the vitamin B that helps us, the cells, to metabolize iron. And this iron dysfunction in our iron metabolism in the brain might be related to Parkinson's disease. And Alzheimer's disease are showing a big connection between gingivitis and the bacteria that causes cavities, translocating to the lower digestive system, and then producing toxins and things getting outside of the digestive system, making their way to the central nervous system, where we have an immune response that, you know, leads to, say, Alzheimer's. With these short chain fatty acids, it's serotonin production. So 90% serotonin produced in the gut. Serotonin is a very important neurotransmitter, not just the feel-good molecule, but it's also very important. It gives the signaling to the digestive system on how old gut motility, appetite, and different things. But it's also related to the melatonin that's in all the cells in the body. So there's melatonin that we think about with the circadian rhythm, but melatonin is in the cells of all of all through the body, and that plays a critical role in mitochondrial function. That's like one of the main supporting molecules to the mitochondria. But the precursor to melatonin in the cells is serotonin. So serotonin that's produced in the gut circulates through the body, makes its way into the cells, and is converted into melatonin, which then supports the mitochondria. And we know that if a dysbiosis or poor microbiome, the cells in the gut that produce serotonin don't function properly, and we don't get proper levels of serotonin. And they're relating this to PTSD. So we know, like with anxiety and people with PTSD, if you change the microbiome, you start to improve cognitive function and start to reduce anxiety and these sorts of things. But even now, the studies are showing that the condition of your gut at the time you experience stress or trauma affects the way that the body is able to regulate and process that trauma, making you, if you're in dysbiosis at the time you experience trauma, you're more predisposed to developing PTSD. And these same cells, so there's this other molecule called corticotropin factor, a release factor that regulates cortisol, and the same cells in the gut that produce serotonin produce this corticotropin factor. And we know that when we're in dysbiosis now, that those cells are dysregulated and you produce not only less serotonin, but you also produce more of this corticotropin factor. And that might be related to the body's ability to actually manage and handle stress and trauma and the gut-brain connection and that way. So I don't know, we went off in a lot of different ways, but they all kind of come back and they're connected to this nutrient absorption, short-chain fatty acids, and a healthy, diverse, you know, gut microbiome.
Okay, so before we conclude today, we're going to get even weirder in the science department. And I've actually got a call to action attached to that. Yeah, I just came up with this. But first, I wanted to ask you, Gabe, so we're a couple of days away from Christmas, which for most for people that celebrate that holiday is like epic mealtime, feasting time. And so I wanted to, what digestion hacks do you have for these epic meal times that come around a couple times a year that I do think we should indulge in them because we're biohackers so that we can indulge in the spice and in the variety of life from time to time.
Yeah, I think when you look at it traditionally, there was a reason for why we did fast and then we did celebrations and feasts. I don't think it's just coincidental. I mean, some of it has to do with mental health and the socialization around this, especially these wintertime holidays like Thanksgiving, where we're celebrating the harvest or the winter solstice at Christmas and New Year's, and celebrating because it's a social event and there's something to eating and feeling enriched and feeling like life is plentiful. I think there's a lot there, but there's probably also some things there from a biological standpoint that, you know, there's times where we need to fast and clear the digestive system. And there's times where we need to kind of, you know, overeat a little bit. It's kind of like fattening up or whatever. But as far as hacks for dealing with it, one is, you know, probably like with everything in our modern world, which was not a problem with the ancient world, don't overdo it with the sugars. But I mean, that's easier said than done. But I mean, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that you need to do is just try to just cut back somewhat, at least on the desserts, if you can't do it all the way. That's going to be a big one. Another one, I think, is the gluten, you know, so that kind of goes right along with the sugar. When we eat a lot of the foods that have the sugar in them also they're high in gluten. And I haven't personally over the years been as much of an advocate on reducing gluten in your diet. I know people with celiac disease, but the more I learn about gluten, the more I really believe that it's another thing like sugar that we have too much of and we've just in the modern world. So, you know, I don't know. I would try to stick as much as possible whenever you've got a choice between the desserts and the processed things. And remember, even desserts and even if they don't come from a factory or something, they're still processed in a sense. You know, if you can stick to the whole foods, make sure, you know, go a little more heavy on the collard greens. If you're here in the Southern United States, collard greens are a major part of our Christmas and Thanksgiving dinners. I'm in Colorado right now, but I'm from the South. And you know, you go more for those vegetables and those fibers and the meats, if you're a meat eater and the whole foods and try to make it so that you're not as tempted by the sugary foods, get some exercise, get out and walk and that kind of thing. But having a good, you're going to get through all of this if you have a good healthy microbiome. So if you are a good brew user, you know, hopefully, you know, that's going to benefit you as well. If you're not a good brew user, then, you know, you can think about adding that to your routine and maybe next year, it's there to help you a little bit. But obviously that soluble fiber in combination with the probiotics are going to help you, you know, digest your food. And we get, we get lots of testimonials where it's really helped people with many of these digestive health issues that they have, in addition to people just, you know, optimizing health and that kind of thing. So exercise, vegetables, the whole meats, lower the salts too, man. Sodium is rough. So the salted hams and all of those kinds of things, especially as you get older, your body really does not like a lot of sodium. That raises your blood pressure and that starts to mess with everything else as well. So,
Okay. So I had promised some weird science around the gut-brain connection. And here it is there have been some recent studies on personality transplant via gut microbes. So there was a study and it was gut microbiota may affect personality in Mongolian gerbils. And so what they did was they categorized human toddlers. And I don't think there's any other type of toddler. I think they're all human. But they categorized toddlers as exuberant or shy. And then they got their poop. Not hard to get poop from a toddler. And they gave them to rats, and then it affected the rats' personalities, either making them more social and exploratory or making them more more withdrawn. Yeah, the wimpy rats in the corner of the little rat cage, I suppose. I thought that was pretty mind-blowing. And the recommendation that comes with this is that a more social kind of microbiome would be one that thrives on more diverse fibers. And so the recommendation that went along with this was to try to eat 30 different types of plants a week. And I said, okay, that sounds interesting. That sounds it. Like, because a lot of times people on the personal development track, they're looking for like ways to liberate themselves socially. They're looking to get outside of their comfort zone. They're looking for more confidence. And so it makes sense that there'd be a gut connection there. But I was trying to think how the heck you would eat 30 different plants a week. I don't even think... my wife does a pretty great job of, like, she's pretty decent diversity of mealtime here. And I don't think I'm even close to 30 plants.
Yeah. And I don't know if you could really prove that eating 30 is going to give you a more diverse microbiome. And it probably depends a lot on whether you're eating raw vegetables or cooked vegetables and those sorts of things as well. So, you know, diversity is good. I mean, diversity in what we're eating is going to be good for your microbiome. Like, that's people with carnivore diets, for example. One of the biggest mistakes they make is not getting a proper amount of fiber. So if you don't have the fiber, your cells can't produce the short chain fatty acids, so you can't properly digest the proteins. So you're getting a lot of protein, but are they really useful to the body? You know, your microbiome plays a huge role in that. So yeah, diversity in what you're eating, especially even anthropologists, when they look at like ancient civilizations, the healthiest ancient civilizations seem to be the ones that had the most diversity in their food sources. Especially people that like in the nomadic tribes, the ones that can move from the coast at certain times of the year and eat from the sea, and then it can move inland and get, you know, fruits and vegetables and nutrient sources from land. And, you know, it kind of could go back and forth. They seem to be healthier in a lot of ways. So, yeah, that's important.
I'm a big fan of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. And one of the reoccurring themes of that podcast is the settled societies versus the nomadic societies. And so you can think about the Mongols and this like massive army or this massive empire that the Mongols created of all these settled civilizations that lived in cities. And then it seems fairly consistent throughout history that these civilizations that live in cities and have a pretty kind of consistent diet, they kind of get their asses kicked by like the raiders that come down from the steppe on that have been traveling across half the hemisphere in the past season of raping and pillaging, right? So yeah, there's probably a lot to that. If you can try to get that diversity in there, there's probably a lot of benefits to that.
Yeah.
Next weird factoid. I've got three. Okay, microbial hijacking. So certain microbes like Prevotella thrive on sugar, and these are gut microbes, and when they are hungry, they actually can manipulate your vagus nerve to send signals to the brain that mimic a legitimate need for glucose. And they can also affect your taste receptors to make sugar more rewarding. So you might not be, or so this is like one of these interesting things where you have to ask, like, what are you really? Like, we think of ourselves as like a singular being. We think of ourselves as having a spirit or a soul that's like a singular essence of ourselves. But some of these desires that can really lead us astray, in fact, come from bacteria. I think that's also kind of kind of a reminder to maybe perhaps not be so, to take more of a pragmatic view of like self-control failures, that self-control failures are, you can blame your self-control failures on a defect in your soul if you want, but the causality is in your biology. And the more that you work on your biology, the more free will that you're going to have broadly. So I thought that was interesting. And then,
a healthier human, you can say, is a more conscious human. And we can spend more of our time thinking about problems in the world if we're healthier ourselves. And yeah, absolutely, the microbiome is playing a role in our personalities and our cognitive health, and we could talk for a long time about those things, but absolutely. Yeah. There was a famous mouse study, kind of going back to your other one, in 2010, where they showed that these mice were depressed. They would drown in water. They changed the microbiome. The mice started to swim again. Then when they cut the vagus nerve, the mice went back to being depressed. And so that it was what was happening in the gut was signaling to the brain, directly. And then obviously, there's been lots of these studies now started to be done with humans and that kind of thing. So yeah, go ahead to your next one.
Before weird science factoid number three, tell me a little bit more about your stack of like habits and supplements as a biohacker. What are you doing other than taking Good Brew every morning?
Well, there's not a lot that I do, but I do switch back and forth. So I've over the years been an athlete and doing different things. There's different things that I think I kind of know when I might need. So occasionally I'll add B vitamins. In the summertime, I add vitamin D. In the wintertime, I add vitamin D. In the summer, I usually don't do that as much. I've always been a huge on omega-3 fatty acids. So I'm almost always supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids, the DHA and EPA. I think that's incredible. But they do know that when people eat fish, like wild fish versus just supplementing with omega-3s, they tend to get better benefits. And they've made the reason for that. And that's the other nutrients, the B vitamins and things that are in the fish that are important to metabolize the omega-3s. So if you are just supplementing with omega-3s, you need to make sure you're either adding B vitamins and other nutrients to your supplemental stack, or you need to, eat a diverse food source so that you do get the most. I'm sure the microbiome is also playing a big role in how well we're able to utilize something like omega-3s. I do think zinc and magnesium, I don't use them every day, but I, especially if I'm feeling down or something like that, I'll add some zinc and magnesium to my diet. I don't, over the years, I've used amino acids and things at different times when I thought I maybe needed a boost in that as well. Yeah. I try to just tell myself, don't eat so much sugar, keep a healthy microbiome, add omega-3s, some vitamin D at the right times of year. And then I'll magnesium, zinc, and some B vitamins as I feel like I need them.
Okay. Whenever I take a new supplement or try a new product, I try to find the potential cofactors for it, the things that I would take along with it that would take it to the next level. And in the case of Good Brew, Okay, the only cofactor that I could find mentioned in scientific literature was actually HMB. And HMB is one of the best supplements for bodybuilding. Of all of those supplements that you see advertised for building muscle, HMB is, it's like HMB and creatine are probably like the number one and number two most scientifically efficacious supplements for building muscle and bone density and power output. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but I really wasn't able to find many other things that would be like cofactors to good brew. So probably just good coffee or tea.
Yeah, coffee or tea or whatever you put it in. But the thing with good brew is it's supporting your gut microbiome. So keep in mind, you know, that what you're really doing is the food that you're eating is getting more nutrients from this food. You're getting more creatine from the steak when you eat the steak. If you have a healthy microbiome, you're breaking down this is all showing all your microbiome is a little factory. So I think if the good brew is like, it has specific benefits as being like a factory and helping to break down nutrients and absorb more nutrients. And then it's also like a soil amendment in the sense that, you know, when you want to grow certain things in your garden, you know, you add a soil amendment to the garden to create the environment in the garden that then helps you grow the things that you want to grow. And a healthy gut microbiome and good brew is sort of that soil amendment to the healthy microbiome that then produces all these other important factors that then help you get the most from your supplements, but also from the foods that you're eating. So, right. You mean, and you know, we know like with creatine, so we get it from the foods that we eat. You can supplement with creatine, but we also know that when you add a little bit, your body produces creatine as well. So we get some percentage of the creatine from the food sources or supplementation and some from the body. And we do know that as the body, if you get more from food and supplementation, the body does produce less of its own creatine. So there's a balance there as well. So first, you know, eat healthy and have a healthy microbiome so you get the maximum that you can from that. If your cells aren't functioning, remember short chain fatty acids are produced by the microbiome. All these other supplements, all the other foods you're eating, if you're not producing short chain fatty acids in the right levels, your cells just aren't functioning correctly and they're not going to absorb whatever it is that you're putting into your body.
I want to jump back about an hour in the conversation to where we were talking about yogurt. And in the show notes for this episode, which people will find below wherever they are watching or listening to us, I'm going to search around on Amazon and find the best type of trays for creating your own yogurt. Because I think there's going to be people that want to try that. I want to try that. So I'm going to find a good source on just the trays for that. And I wanted to add about yogurt. Okay, a lot of the biohackers in my audience probably take NMN and or methylene blue, because these are, NMN is, I'm sure you know about NMN, but it's the best NAD plus booster. But the most pleasant way to consume NMN is actually in yogurt. That's the easiest way to consume it. Not many people do that, but I started doing it, and it makes a really easy way to consume it. And then also, let's see, there was this video that was going around, that was going viral, where RFK, the guy in charge of, I follow politics so little these days, but he's in charge of something big in the government, and he's very, very controversial. And there was this video circulating of him putting methylene blue in his drinking water. And for some reason, the internet got excited about this. And I saw that and I said, that's actually a really dumb way to consume methylene blue, because you put it in the water and then you have to be paranoid about spilling the water, especially if you're a big shot politician. Just imagine if you spilled methylene blue on your suit, like that'd be the end of that suit, right? And then if you consume methylene blue in water that way, you're going to dye your mouth blue for like the next 2 hours, which is also a bad idea if you're a politician. The smart way to consume methylene blue is in yogurt. You just dip it in the yogurt, and then you enjoy your yogurt, and it doesn't change the taste of the yogurt at all. And then you get your methylene blue without dyeing your mouth extremely blue for the next 2 hours.
Well, with the NMMs, so just let me add to that, because one of the first formulations we had of predecessors of Good Brew had NR in it. And I have used NR and NMN. But you need to look at this research too. So it's the microbiome, they think. So when they look at like NR, does NR actually, the chemo riboside, does it actually go into the cells and convert to NAD or whatever? Or maybe same thing with even with NMM. But they think the microbiome is actually playing a big role in converting, especially NR, maybe NMN too, to actually to nicotinamide. It's a nicotine. Well, so there's nicotinamide and there's niacin. So, yeah, so niacin is a precursor to NAD, but it gives us the flushing and all of that kind of thing. So they think that the microbiome is actually playing. We know the microbiome plays a role in converting B vitamins and things that's well known. But they actually think that the NR might just be getting converted by the microbiome into niacin at a slow enough level that it doesn't create the flushing, but it was ultimately the niacin that's getting into the cells that's boosting the NAD. So the microbiome is playing an important role there too as well. And that would also even apply to food sources and things that we're eating. So the microbiome playing a role in creating these B vitamins that are essential for neurological function and cellular function.
Aha. Hopefully I'll hear back from some of the biohackers in my audience that use NMN. If they use something like Good Brew in addition to the NMN, if they feel like they get more bang for their buck out of the NMN. NMN can be, it can have some pretty mind-blowing effects, but I have a lot of other content about it, which I'll link to. Okay, the third weird factoid is that your brain is kind of sort of like the PR department of your gut. So your brain and your gut are kind of like, if you can imagine two people in a relationship where there's one person that just talks all the time, about 90% of the time. And then there's another person that every once in a while gets in a slim word into the conversation. And that would be the brain. So the gut actually sends like way more signals up to the brain via the vagus nerve than the brain sends down. And so you can kind of imagine like a couple where there's one person in the couple that like just has a bunch of crazy things to say, but also some reasonable things, but a bunch of crazy things to say also. But then there's the other half of the couple that like interprets the signal to noise and ends up like communicating something coherent and cogent on behalf of the two. And that's the gut brain team together. And the the biohacker takeaway from this is vagal toning, which is things like cold exposure or breath work to tone the vagal nerve so that it's doing a better job of signal versus noise interpretation. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The gut, and they think there's lots of reasons for why would the gut have such a high number of neurons. It's not just for digestion. It's for observing the environment that we're in and potential dangers, et cetera. And so it's always sending this information to the brain. So it's really offloaded a lot of the neural processing and energy consumption that we would have to have in our brain has been offloaded to the gut. So the gut is like an auxiliary component to our nervous system, but it's also separate from the central nervous system. It's developed in its own, they're two different areas. The gut will keep working, whereas like if you cut the spinal cord, it will shut off everything, connected to the central nervous system in the body, but not with the gut. The gut's running on its own, autonomy there. So yeah, it's sending these signals to the brain, telling the brain that, hey, this is going on, this is this, that, and the other, but also the other way around. So when we're under stress, we, you know, a lot of times when people get nervous speaking, they have all kinds of, like, just as an example, or any other kind of nervous situation, they have all kinds of digestive issues. And that's because the theory is that we're shutting down the gut in order to provide more energy for the brain. So if you're starting off with a healthy gut to begin with, you have more fuel in the tank, so to speak, right? And we know that, so when we're under stress, that affects the gut, but we also know when the gut's not healthy, it affects stress. So it's a reciprocal situation. And the term has actually been used, unhygienic. So when we're under stress, we actually have an unhygienic environment in the gut. In other words, the gut's not functioning properly because of the stress that we're under, which then if we're under that stress for long periods of time, rather, you know, for your short period of time, no big deal. But if you're under that kind of stress for days and weeks and months and years, that unhygienic environment in the gut then starts to, you know, really have an impact on the gut microbiome, which means now you have an unhealthy gut microbiome, which means now you have all of these other kinds of health issues that start to come up from that. So that's why lowering stress and exercise and eating well is good for the gut microbiome, and having a healthy microbiome is good for stress and better exercise and muscle recovery and mental function. So they're working together. But yeah, your point about how the brain's filtering all that information is spot on.
Thank you. So as a final call to action for the listener, we've made a really strong case here for how optimizing gut health gives you the liberty to have the kind of personality that you want. Dysfunctional gut health is going to affect your personality and your behavior, your thoughts, your relationships, everything downstream of your biology, which is so much. And optimizing your gut health gives us this remarkable opportunity to decide what kind of people we want to be. And so I would just urge the listener to, they're probably listening sometime in January of 2026 of the new year. Oh, no, I just did that thing that you're not supposed to do as a podcaster, which is say which year it is, because then the podcast can become dated if people listen to it in the future. But this is a really universal one, is think about this year, what kind of person you want to be, and think about how you might want to change your personality this year, because your personality shouldn't stay static. Your personality should be dynamic. Of course, there's certain principles, there's certain things that you believe in that you'll probably believe in your whole life, but your personality is something that can become dynamic. And maybe this next year is a year that you should be more empathic, or maybe not. Sometimes being really empathic is not exactly what you need. Maybe it's a year that you need to be harder working or more focused or more. Yeah, think about what's coming ahead in the year that you have and how you might want to hack and change your personality to deal with that year. And with your gut health optimized, that's something that you have the power to do, is to change your personality this year. And then, hey, maybe there's bad results from the way you change your personality and you want to change it to balance out the next year. But when you optimize your gut health, you give yourself that freedom to change your mind and everything that flows out from it. So just if you have a bit of contemplative time in the new year, maybe sit down with pen and pad and do some journaling on that subject. And then this product here, Good Brew, I really like what you guys are about. So I added this product as a Limitless Mindset Secret Society vendor, which is kind of this private community that I have for biohackers that I know are like investing seriously in their biohacking and in their personal growth. And I have a rather high bar to entry to this, or somewhat high bar to entry to this, which is that if people purchase over $300 worth of products from my recommended vendors, then I invite them beyond the velvet rope into my secret society. And I also do a free 30-minute consultation with them. And people would have to purchase quite a bit of this stuff to spend $300. But who knows, maybe Christmas gifts coming up, you got friends, family who are inevitably going to complain about their health problems around the mealtime, around the table. And so I would direct people, to they could pick up $300 worth of products. They can mix and match. So people could get some good brew, and then they could get some of the other products that I recommend there on that page. And that would make them eligible for a free consultation with me. So I do hope to hear back from some people about how they are going to be trying to change their identity, edit their identities in small ways with that liberation that is lended to them by gut optimization. I'm Jonathan with Limitless, looking forward to a continued conversation with you.
Hippocrates leaned back 2,000 years ago, said all illness starts in the gut. Now science says he knew. Below the ribs, below the talk, below the ego spin, there's a nervous system whispering, deciding how you win. Stress hits first in the belly, not the head. The gut feels danger long before a thought is said. The gut-brain connection is deeper, weirder, and far more literal than we ever imagined. It's not just vibes or metaphorical invention. The gut-brain connection is deeper, weirder, and far more literal than we ever imagined. Your mind might just be public relations. Probiotics, prebiotics, symbiotics in the mix. Psychobiotics tweaking how your mood and habits tick. Personality transplants through microbial traits. Cravings hijacked quietly by bacterial rays. Brain spin stories justifying the urge. A PR department for microbes looking to surge. Scoop of probiotic yogurt, culture's alive. BC30 on the label, we just call it BC30 inside. Organic agave in Newland feeds the right crowd. You're not eating alone, you're hosting now. Start the morning steady, not wired or blue. Good brew in your cup, setting the tone of you. Gut health isn't sexy, no flashing lights, but it sharpens free will and tightens the fight. Stress wrecks the gut amplifies stress. A feedback loop that punishes guess and check. Fix the second mind, discipline the core. And suddenly temptation doesn't own you anymore. This is about agency, not trends or hype. Reclaiming choice at the cellular type. When microbes align, clarity follows through. A more dangerous, deliberate version of you. Master the ecosystem, not just the thought. Because willpower starts where neurons are not. The gut-brain connection is deeper, weirder, and far more literal than we ever imagined. It's not just vibes or metaphorical invention. The gut-brain connection is deeper, weirder, and far more literal than we ever imagined. Your mind might just be public relations. Getting your gut health right.
gives you the right to architect your personality and therefore your reality. So what will you build? Ponder that while sipping your morning beverage of choice.